Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Adult Education. We are continuing our series with Mark Edwards, who is the Director of Youth Ministry here at Nassau. And today's presentation is on Beauty, Great, and Nano, the Brilliance of Nature. Join me in welcoming Mark.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here again for the third and final session. I like nature. That's a picture of our trip to beyond Malibu with Nassau Presbyterian Church a few years ago. We slept out in the snow and about 8,000 feet and woke up to a beautiful dawn. I like nature. It is beautiful. Sun cups and granite and the mesmerizing capacities of light. There we are. There we are, that's Nassau. It's a fantastic realm. Hey, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Sometimes you have to change your perspective a little bit to see beauty that is there. Sometimes you don't have to travel far. You just wake up on a frosty morning and there's ice crystals on the grass. That was at a cross-country meet. Yes, New Jersey can be beautiful. New Jersey is beautiful. My wood pile, I think, is particularly beautiful. Flowers, of course. There's this beauty all around us. Whether it's nebula up in the skies or Naboo on the earth. Just the beauty of the natural world, the beauty of the world. So I want to talk about way too much today, talk about beauty, talk about nature, talk a little bit about Bible, and then talk about the future of technology, all in 20 minutes or something like that. So, you know, we have these passages in Scripture that say, in Him all things in heaven and on earth were created. In the beginning, says Genesis, when God began creating the heavens and the earth. 1 John attributes creation to the Logos. Again, Colossians, all things have been created through Him and for Him. We've had big histories of debates over science, over religion, over interpreting these scriptures. I in some ways want to just step back and try and transcend some of those debates and just say nature is brilliant. The beauty of nature is brilliant. The beauty of nature is manifestly brilliant, obviously brilliant, continually brilliant. But there's also some points that are grounds for rethinking kind of the depth and the scope of that brilliance. We talk about the Big Bang. We talk about the origins of the cosmos. You probably know, and some of you have heard me talk about this before, but Big Bang postulates that four things come into being. Those four things are what? Matter is typically seen as the first one.
Energy.
Yeah, time and space are the other two. Matter, energy, space, and time. Christians have always talked about, maybe not always, but even in the book of Hebrews, by faith we hold that the things that are visible came from invisible. Christian theologians have long talked about the notion of creation ex nihilo, creation out of nothing. Augustine, in his Confessions, argues that before creation there is only God, and out of nothing, God creates stuff, creates light, creates distance, and creates time. Augustine effectively has a Big Bang cosmology right in the Confessions. An inflationary universe that seems to erupt and it start to expand. Which way is it going? Is it going up? Is it going down? Is it going left? Is it going right? We don't know. Crazier than that is that the edges of the universe seem to be speeding up If matter, energy, space, and time are speeding up at the fringes, what are they expanding into? Of course, a brief Google search for nebula brings up pictures of worlds without end, beauty without end, brilliance without end, in some ways the fireworks of creation. Looking back in time as the light has traveled for millions, billions of light years to finally reach us. It's beautiful. The Helix Nebula, the Eskimo Nebula. It's bizarrely brilliant. The Hourglass or God's Eye Nebula. And there's so many more. Not only is it brilliant, it's raised questions about, of course, where does it all come from? There's a medieval argument for the proof for the existence of God, that the dark night sky proves there is a God. And that's because if nature and the heavens and light had just always infinitely been there, then they would be equally distributed across all spaces and places. And so they wouldn't have a dark sky with a differentiation between light and dark. Dark spots are evidence of light not having yet reached there, which is evidence of needing some sort of temporal time span and some sort of beginning. And then if you need a beginning, then therefore, eventually you need a God. Cosmic fine-tuning. We've got this. Not only the origins of matter, energy, space, and time, but now the arrangement of them. The pale blue dot, Earth caught in a beam of light from the Voyager 1 as it flew out to visit Venus. It turns around and takes a picture of Earth. That's us. Our location on a midway out on a spiral arm galaxy seems uniquely hospitable for life. Were we farther into the middle, it would be too hot, too dense, too bright. Were we farther out, it would be too cold, too vacuous, too empty. We exist about halfway out on a spiral arm. As we stand up and look into the Milky Way, you are looking back in towards the center of the Milky Way galaxy, the spiral galaxy. But you can also look out. Cosmic fine-tuning, as it's called, is a curious thing. It's an acknowledged thing. To some degree, the debate is not whether there is cosmic fine-tuning. Most and many simply agree that there is. Paul Davies' Why Is the Universe Just Right for Life in his book, The Goldilocks Enigma. The question is, what do you draw from that? What, if anything, should we infer from the fine-tuning of our universe for life? Some people see the therefore God argument rising to the surface. Some people see the therefore no conclusion whatsoever. I don't want to address that. But the base evidence is that we are a very special pale blue dot that exists in a unique place, in a unique way, with many parameters that seem extremely, and that are extremely fine-tuned for the existence of many forms of life. Such that it's often called the privileged planet. Our attempts to find life on other planets is, in effect, an attempt to find another Earth. And the parameters that exist around Earth, all of which, even moons and Jupiters, to some degree contribute to the hospitality of our planet. We have these things emerging, the origin of matter, space, and energy, time, the unique location and the privileged nature of a planet and the fine-tuning of the universe that supports life. That there is life seems to need to be explained. We have these base cellular structures, the most fundamental component of life, which was one time thought to be a little blob of jelly, is now known not to be a little blob of jelly. It's very complex. Complexity is a unique thing, too. You can shatter a window and put all the pieces in a bag, and that's a complex bag, but there's not arrangement, there's not meaning, there's not purpose. The thing about cellular structures is that, yes, there are many parts, but they also are arranged. They're integrated. They are functionally operational only in and with the other parts around them. Anybody been studying their biochemistry lately and know what this is? Yes?
Cell membrane.
You're right. It is a cell membrane right there, and we have some sort of structure which is a bacteria flagellum on a little single cell E. coli. So, you know, if a cell is the most basic element of life, this is basic plus one. It's got a string attached, except that that string, which is a tail, spins and functions as an outboard motor with universal joints and propellers and drive shafts and bushings that are made out of proteins. It's impressive. It's acid-powered, liquid-cooled. It can spin at 100,000 RPMs. It can reverse directions in a quarter of a turn. It's swimming through Brownian motion, which is effectively an ever-dynamic, changing, close to chaotic fluid, and yet it has an internal navigational system that can navigate, you know, the constantly fluctuating sidewalk. It has clutches that can engage and disengage. The clutch, actually, the whole flagellum can disassemble and turn itself into a syringe and inject toxins into the cell. So not only is it have an immediately and very impressive one system structure, it's got another whole system embedded in that. The nano world, not just the cosmic great world, the nano world of the cells is an amazingly impressive world. It's full of molecular machines, tiny, molecular sized operating structures. Again, study your cell biology. The textbook is thick. All kinds of things are happening down there. There's electricity, there's power plants, there's nutrients, there's microtubules, which are variable destination highways that can build and construct and then deconstruct on demand, monorails. There is there's transport systems. Of course, all this is happening in every little cell. Where's Tyler? Tyler, I might have you. I like nature, so I'm going to give you. I could have done that earlier. Crespedias. Tiny little cosmoses on the tip of a flower. It could be a Dr. Seuss book. Tiny little cosmoses in every cell. You know, get on YouTube and watch the animations. They're amazing. If you talk about the orders of magnitude of complexity and integration and sophistication of a single cell, we're well past a factory. We're well past an airport. We're well past a metropolis. We're on the order of something like a Death Star. You know, except a Death Star is a system designed for destruction, and cells presumably are the basis of life. Except that even cells are way more complex and sophisticated than a Death Star, because a cell can do what? It can self-replicate, and it is doing it in magnificent rates. Nature is brilliant, and you know, the more we learn, wow, that's brilliant. There's more brilliance there. At the heart of cells, of course, is not just stuff. It's not just parts. It's not just impressive little machines. At the base of cells is genetic information. It's code. It's text. It's data. It's a book down there. It's a code. Computers use a binary code of zeros and ones. Genetic information is carried in four parts, a quadrupledic code. I'm sure there's probably a better word. What is it? I don't know what it is. A four-part code. ATCs and Gs, the nucleotide bases. You can encode Shakespeare on DNA. Your DNA is unique. Your DNA is the most sophisticated information storage system on the planet, far beyond any computer that we have. You have terabytes of data, terabytes, in each cell, in each little flick of your skin. It's just stunning. I have a friend who works in the biotech, and you know, you can get your whole DNA sequenced and sell it to the doctors so that they can run, you know, and they're giving terabytes of data for portions of your DNA. Hard drives. So look, nature is brilliant. We're living on a fine-tuned earth. Matter, energy, space, and time, cosmic fine-tuning, origins of self-replicating cells, molecular machines, genetic information, diversity, abundance. And then here's this strange thing, the beauty of life. You know, and I think it's legitimate to ask the question, what does this mean? Where did it all come from? Increasingly, the old option, a long time ago, the option was God, right? And then the option became science. And by science, what that meant was some combination of chance and necessity, some combination of laws operating on random variations. That certainly is a good explanation at some levels. But at some levels, you have to make what's called a design inference. You can infer the action of an agency of an intelligent mind. This is a little bit more complex than it needs to be. We make design inferences all the time. We know that there's things in that image that are best explained by chance, natural law, gravity. We know that there's things that are best explained by regular routine processes, wind and erosion. But we also know that there's things in that image that are best explained by the actions of an intelligent agent or a set of intelligent agents, of minds. Now, the things that are the product of minds, yes, they also are susceptible to wind and erosion. They also have a degree of chance in them, embedded in them. But the overall guiding structure of those faces is not wind and erosion, right? Now, we make that design inference because we recognize a pattern. It's a meaningful. We recognize four presidents. But we also do this all the time, even if we don't fully understand what it is we're encountering. A Rosetta Stone is not the product of dust, sand, and wind. It's the product of minds. We don't even know how many. We can make these design inferences with a good degree of security, a good degree of rationality, a good degree of reasonableness. It just might be that with the origins of all stuff, the arrangement, the unique attributes of the location that we happen to live on, the functional, integrated, irreducible complexity, meaning that in some of these systems, if you pull one piece out, the whole thing shuts down. This means that base functions at cellular life, at cellular levels, are akin to a complex email address. If you pull one piece out of your email address, how much of the email still goes through?
None,
right? That's the problem with some of these structures. They have this attribute of irreducible complexity. You pull one thing out, the whole thing shuts down. Again, not just matter and the arrangement of matter, but the information that's guiding the arrangement of matter. Now, If you're nervous that I'm talking about natural theology, I'm getting close. If you're nervous that, natural theology is intellectually outdated and that it was falsified by the Enlightenment and especially the likes of David Hume, I mean, you're getting close. But here's the final, and this is a footnote, yes, but this is a key text in, kind of intellectual history that would seem and is taken to render inferences to design and inferences to gods based on nature illegitimate. Hume kind of is famous for breaking that argument. But the great thing about this book is that Hume creates a three-way dialogue. He doesn't like the Socratic dialogues where you obviously know who's supposed to win. He's trying to give you one that's so complex you don't really know who's supposed to win. At one point, one of the guys just stomps out of the argument and says, I'm done. You guys, I'm furious. We're not making any. So Demia just leaves the room. Philo's closing words to Cleanthes, Demia's already left, is that, believe me, Cleanthes, the most natural sentiment which a well-disposed mind will feel on this occasion is a longing, desire, and expectation that heaven would at least, or that heaven would be pleased to dissipate, at least alleviate, this profound ignorance by affording some more particular revelation. Hume's argument is you don't know who the designer is, you don't know what the designer is about, you don't even know if they're good, if there's one, you don't know how long it took. It's not illegitimate to infer that there's design. You just can't start making claims about who and what the nature of that designer is just based on the product. We know this is made. We don't know who and how many people did it, if their name is Joe, right? Hume argues if you're going to know any of that stuff, you need some more particular revelation. Now, he's a bit of a skeptic, so whether he thinks there is some more particular revelation is another question. But even his most skeptical character, Philo, says a person, this bottom one, a person seasoned with a just sense of the imperfections of natural reason will fly to revealed truth with the greatest avidity. While the haughty dogmatist, persuaded he can erect a complete system of theology by the mere help of philosophy, disdains any further aid and rejects this adventitious instructor. Hume's point is you need more information. You need some more particular revelation. Well, look, you know, we're a Christian church. We talk about some more particular revelation. We talk about Jesus. We talk about in him all things in heaven and on earth were created. The brilliance of nature might not just be accidental. That's part one. Question. Well, he's growing up in Scotland. It's Christian. He can't stand the religious wars.
He's a Presbyterian.
There you go. Other questions or comments? That's part one. Part two. Okay. So look, we live on this planet. We have some ecological issues that we need to address, right? We have a trash problem. We have a trash problem that isn't quarantined to trash processing facilities. We have a trash problem that's impacting lives. We have noxious fumes. We have a variety of ecological problems that need addressing. One standard line is that there are limited natural resources, and the primary ecological problem that we're facing is the exhausting of natural resources. I don't deny that that's a total problem, but if you came last week, you know I'm actually undercutting that, I'm not the only one, because what is the most significant natural resource available to us that we have? Jonathan? Intelligence, right. Intelligent creativity discovers uses for natural resources in the first place and then applies them. I would argue, and in fact, again, this is a bit of a footnote. We talked about it last week. In some ways, do you all know what the resource? In some ways, it's you're the liability if you're born into a place that has traditionally valued heavy natural resources, whereas in Israel or Japan, a Boston, a Princeton, without excessive natural resources, that cultivates intelligence. So it's better to be born into a Princeton than it is to a coal town of West Virginia. In fact, having lots of natural resources just sets you up for colonization, empire, exploitation, slavery, and a life that is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short, thanks to the wealthy Westerners. The problem isn't it painful? The problem facing us isn't limited natural resources. The primary problem facing us is just stupid design, poor design, wasteful design. You have one of the most sophisticated packaging systems in the known universe, and you're wasting it by wrapping it in plastic and oil and toxins. So if intelligence is the greatest natural resource, then finite natural resources aren't actually maybe the greatest dilemma. What's the greatest dilemma is, can we come up with better solutions? And that's where human technology, I think, has great purpose and value. What will save the planet? Basically beautiful organic design. And the thing about beauty, when you add beauty to the situation, things just get better. They get stronger, they get simpler, they get more elegant, they last longer. There's a designer up at MIT, Neri Oxman. She's all over the TED Talks. She's designing a lot of interesting things, but she's done a whole system of pavilions, variety of shapes and styles. They will build a base structure and then populate it with 16,000 silkworms. And the silkworms will live their lives. And they've learned that the silkworms will spin silk in relation to the kinds of structures that they're actually on. And so you can frame a structure, and the silkworms will do the rest. The mulberry leaves?
The silkworm can't spin if it's not eating.
They figured that out. I don't quite know how they do it, but beautiful organic design. For design to succeed, it has to operate by the laws of nature, by the laws of physics, by the basic rules of chemistry. The more we learn about chemistry, the more we learn about physics, the more we learn, the better we can design. The more we learn about the base science, the more new materials we can construct. Some things we wouldn't be able just to build out of mud and clay, out of cinder blocks. And yet we're living in this world with the periodic table of elements, and there's all these things at our disposal, and we can reverse engineer and learn and build, in some ways, things of great beauty that are in harmony with the laws of physics, and that add great beauty to the environment. That's to say that nature, in some ways, is already got the best brilliant designs embedded within it. Brilliant not only in terms of a degree of aesthetic beauty, but brilliant also in terms of, these are very functional. These are strong. These are enduring. You do it this way, and it's actually lighter, cheaper, stronger, with greater longevity than if you do it in the old way. Nature is solving problems, has been solving problems, has problem solvers embedded in it. Famous little bridge in London that in many ways mimics just the action of an inchworm uncoiling. the more that we are able to design in harmony with nature, then the more harmonious and healthier and better our lives will be. In other words, we need to learn to live like elves and hobbits. Hobbits aren't very sophisticated. They live, right, in well-tilled earth. The elves are the most sophisticated. And of course, the elven aesthetic is highly influenced by natural form, because the elves have learned that if you live in harmony with nature, you will live longer, stronger, healthier, you know, as contrast to the orcs and the Uruk-hai that have no disregard and just think power and destruction is the greatest thing. The nano world below us is a world that in many ways we are just discovering. Mycelium, the structure that gives mushrooms its shape, it's the fibrous structure that exists in mushrooms and molds. You can separate that, you can effectively sterilize it. It has insulation properties better than styrofoam, better than foam board. It can be used as composites, paper. Again, there's TED Talks. All that styrofoam oil-based toxic packaging that we get can easily be reproduced by growing your own packaging that's instantly compostable. Mycelium is also, and maybe some of you have seen these, it's interlaces the dirt beneath our feet. And in forests, we're learning that information is being relayed from tree to tree, and it's being relayed through mycelium. It's a functionally natural equivalent to a fiber optic network. So yes, there are companies that are doing this. If you want to make, you know, millions of dollars, young kids, you know, grow one of these packaging factories next to every Amazon plant and start supplying natural packaging. Again, not just the nano world, but thinking in the macroscopic, redesigning and building. Maybe you know the Danish architect Bjarke Ingels, who has this kind of obscure architectural philosophy, yes is more, which is basically to say, in the old times we needed, you made these choices between an if and a, you know, a this and a that, and now we can just rethink the problems and get both ands, kind of a Hegelian synthesis. We can build buildings that look like nature. We can build buildings that integrate and operate with nature, heating, cooling. We can build buildings and environments that improve and produce natural environments that weren't even there before. Little microclimates. And Bjarke is doing this in around the world. He's got multiple projects in New York City. Again, not just stepping back and realizing that humans in some ways are not the only intelligent agents out there. They are not the only builders out there. Nature itself builds. Gardeners know that you can, in some degree, harness the way that nature builds. Another TED Talk, Joachim Mitchell, talks about basically CNCing frameworks cheaply and relatively easy to assemble, seeding them and allowing nature to grow through the frameworks to effectively complete and give structural integrity and insulation and with a longer degree of longevity and efficiency than even our built structures. We know that there are other intelligent agents out there building: bees, ants, silkworms. Neri Oxman's project at MIT is in many ways to maximize their intelligent capacities by putting them into a framework where they will complete and symbiotically interact with things that we do to create something in the end that's better than what we could do alone. And this is just an example of a interesting, semi-artistic, could be functional. Let's find out the right applications. 3D printed structure that then bees have populated and integrated their own honeycomb into. Now I think we're moving in this direction. On the energy front, we're moving from a produce, build, and distribute on demand with, I don't know, 10 minutes notice, 30 minutes notice, energy. But the electricity that's being employed in this room has to be manufactured basically 10 minutes ago, because we haven't had storage for electricity. You can only zoom it around the grid, in which case you're losing parts of it. With lithium ion technology, crazy Elon Musk, right? We're getting the possibility of storing electricity on large scale that we just have never had before. Again, a limited natural resource, sure, it's a constraint, but you rethink the foundations of the problem, you learn something about lithium ion technology, you realize you can store electricity in a battery, and now all of a sudden you are opening up a resource that you just didn't even have access to before. Sunlight. TCNJ has just put in, the College of New Jersey has just put in solar panels over my parking lot. That was an energy suck. It just was wasted space. It was asphalt. And now it's producing electricity. Is there a finite, limited resource of sunlight? Well, yeah, I suppose. But we haven't been tapping any of it. Is there a finite, limited resource of fossil fuels? Yes. Is there a finite, limited resource of energy? I mean, maybe not. And this is, this is the crass economist in me. You do these solutions, these brilliant solutions, and they become worth more. So now you have a single company, Tesla, that as of November 5th, market fluctuations up and down, Russia invasion notwithstanding, but at least on November 5th, a single company that was worth more than the entire energy sector of all coal, oil companies combined. So Exxon Valdez, Mobil, right? These are tiny fractions of this market that now a single company has exceeded. So if intelligence is the greatest natural resource, and it's learning to build and develop technologies that operate in harmony with nature, then these are brilliant solutions that are worth a lot. And they might just, help move us forward. Intelligent organic design, I think, is what has the capacity to change things. Again, Neri Oxman, an interesting individual wanting to do this. She has a TED Talk where she says, I'm not religious, but there's this funny thing about the Bible, the story in Genesis and how things worked in harmony. I wonder if we could design like that, she says. My grandma used to tell me these stories. Maybe I could design like that. 3D printing with chitin proteins. We've convinced ourselves that to be ecological, we have to have permanent solutions. But the truth is, nature is the queen of disposable and recyclable. Plastic isn't very disposable. It's disposable, it's not very recyclable. Natural proteins would be totally both. Mycelium insulation, that is probably more effective than the asbestos things and fiberglass things that we come up with. Nature has all these solutions embedded within it. Disposable, waterproof, whatever the problem is that effectively we're facing, nature has an intelligent solution embedded within it. And the more that we learn, the more we can learn from it, and the more we can learn to operate with it, and the more we can learn to build better things. Things that are lighter, stronger, faster, more efficient. So this is 3D printed bone. That's natural what bone looks like. That just means we get to create a more interesting and beautiful world. No more cinder block buildings. I'd be so happy to be done with the cinder block buildings. Natural designs endure. They're efficient. They might just win. And companies and designs that can learn from nature, here we have this exoskeleton of the Cybertruck, the great promise from Tesla, a stronger, lighter, more durable stainless steel automobile frame that in many ways takes a cue from an exoskeleton of our beloved, our beloved cicadas. Yes. We have all these we have all these issues, problems to solve. We were just talking neural interface with USB port. I had a slide last week. Again, crazy Elon Musk, Neuralink, operating, designing at the nano level to interface synthetic computation with organic information processing, the brain, growing systems, either for nature's own good, as in growing and farming coral for the sake of the health of the oceans, or just for the sake of our own cities, because it's beautiful and interesting. Where to go for inspiration? Well, it might be that the most solution-rich locations are also the most beautiful. They are also the most fragile. The corals, the Amazon. These should be preserved for a variety of reasons, but the intellectual property effectively embedded within those systems is unrivaled elsewhere. Of course, you don't need to go far. We have nature all around us, and even the nature around us is doing very sophisticated and interesting things. This is New Jersey, our backyard, and Sourlands. I think we're moving in this direction. Have you seen this picture? This is, what is it, Eric? Amazon and Arlington, their new headquarters for the East Coast. HQ2, is this what HQ2 is? Yeah. The mountain, the helix, it'll be an integrated, operating, creating environment, creating, sustained by the environment, built environment. Beauty, we're kind of out of time. Beauty is just, it's worth so much. Alexander Naumov here at the university, an atheist, doesn't think that there is a God out there, but thinks that beauty is the best part of this system. You can't get out of this system, says Naumov. There's nothing out of this system. Beauty doesn't take you out of the system. Beauty is just the best part of the system. It can't offer you ultimate happiness, says Naumov, but it's the best part, it's the best thing this system has to offer. So let's maximize it. David Bentley Hart, a Catholic, beauty takes you to God. he's operating with a much more of a Platonic understanding of beauty. Beauty reveals and declares God's glory. It overcomes the distance between things. It evokes desire. It leads us outward to embrace greater divine glories. It crosses boundaries. It speaks. It's a universal language. It discloses the God who transcends every division. It has authority. He's thinking about beauty not only in philosophical terms, but in theological terms. For Hart, the most beautiful thing is the divine being. A particular concrete beauty is Christianity's deepest truth. So in many ways, this is simply an appeal to maximize, to appreciate, to wake up, to enjoy, and to recreate, to facilitate, to engineer according to principles that delight and expand and foster beauty. And in many ways, that's just the simple goal, to tend a garden and make it more beautiful. We'll end there.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to take questions if there are any. Question. What are the unintended consequences of beauty? We've seen many things developed over the history of the humanity that had unintended consequences. Yes, absolutely. And I think this is, again, I made a plea last week for giving a Christ-centered understanding of humanity or church contributing to the conversation of what it means to be human. And this is where I think that again, the church has a role. Christianity has a role, theologians have a role to really try to articulate what beauty is, because glorifications of beauty can quickly turn ugly. But if the church has a deeper and a bigger vision of what's beautiful, and I did skip, I just want you to know, I did exhibit some self-restraint. I didn't go to Karl Barth, now I have to. If we have an understanding of beauty that centers around redemption, it centers around life-giving and human flourishing and human well-being, then that's a better understanding of beauty. But yes, we need to have a good understanding of beauty. And just since the words are on the slide, I'll just say, like Naamas, Barth thinks that there is beauty that's just, it's a temporal thing. It's within the world. Like Hart, who's a Catholic, Barth does think that Trinity, the Trinitarian give-it-awayness, the triune relating, that's the ultimate foundation of beauty. So beauty is fundamentally related to giving. If beauty's going to tell us about God, only the Holy Spirit can do that. Hart thinks that reason alone can kind of tap into beauty and you start staring at the beautiful and you'll start staring at God. Barth thinks that you actually, the Holy Spirit needs to reveal God to you through that. But the divine redemption through Christ can make anything beautiful. And that separates, I think, separates and beautifies what could be just a strict dichotomy between pretty and ugly. I think it's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm struck by, I'll just say, one of my favorite songs, your favorite song, Edgar Winter's gospel version of Who Will Save Our Planet, Save the Planet, Who Will Save Our Planet. intellect, our involvement, our personal attention to these ideas, to the idea that we need to redistribute the natural resources so that these ideas can be cultivated, right? I mean, we're just not going to get there, right? That's my biggest concern is the who. Because if we're not trying to get rid of plastic, we're just going to live with it. Because the capitalists own the plastic, they own the processes for making the plastic, and they're not going to stop making the plastic because they're going to try to convince you that they can recycle the plastic or they can do something without. You can have a special bottle and you can put the cap on. Oh, we even recycle caps now. Oh my goodness, what a great progress we're making.
So the question of who,
caps are giving us all cancer.
So the question of who will do this and how do you break through the system? Well, that's why I love that question. I think that's the value of education. That's why we're in this business. I think that's one of the redeeming virtues of the internet and a TED Talk that can beam to Princeton, to India, to Africa, to North Dakota. And I do think that in some ways that's a value of a managed free market system where a more environmental solution like power storage can then become far more valuable than the old toxic solutions. Because we value the health and longevity and safety and that this new thing offers. Okay. All right, we're going to open the doors. Thank you. And that's why I teach this stuff to engineers, to try and change the world.